What the hell did you guys do with the country while I was gone?
I cannot believe you were not here for impeachment, Kalen.
Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk and I am back from vacation. And before I begin, I want to say thank you to everyone who helped out and worked overtime while I was away last week. I know the news cycle was crazy, so thank you to our intern, Jake Arlo, to Tony Chow in the control room, deputy editor, Chad Matlin. You guys got to meet my editor. That was fun.
Having Chad on is always fun.
And of course, Micah, Nate, and Claire, thanks to you guys for pumping out three podcasts last week. Thank you. I guess the lesson is I'll never go on vacation again.
We had a running joke in the office when people went on vacation that we would say, if the president is impeached, we're going to call you back from vacation. I think if you were vacationing domestically, we would have considered it more. But that you were overseas, you know, that's a bit much.
Thank you for letting me live out my vacation in, well, somewhat peace. I was reading the news the entire week. But anyway, it has been almost a week since Speaker Pelosi announced a formal impeachment inquiry based on President Trump pressuring Ukraine to investigate the Bidens and the Democratic Party. So today, we're going to take stock of how much public opinion has changed in a week and what it tells us about the road ahead. Also, you could be forgiven if you forgot that the Democratic Party is in the middle of a presidential primary, but it is. And Elizabeth Warren appears to be rising in the polls just about everywhere. So at what point is it fair to consider her the front runner? We'll ask that question today. And here with me to do all of that are managing editor Micah Cohen. You're actually the only other person with me in studio, so we're going to go to you first. How's it going?
I have so much room at the desk here. Let me just spread out my stuff a little bit.
And
it's very nice.
Joining us from the road is editor-in-chief Nate Silver. Hey, Nate.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Sad you're not here with us.
Can they see Nate on ABC News?
On ABC News, they can see Nate. On the podcast, they can't see, well, any of us.
For podcast listeners, Galen and I are looking at a computer screen of Nate on the other side of the table, just for context here.
Wow, technology.
Just to paint the picture of the room.
And Claire is out today, so it is just the three of us. But a shout out to Claire because she just published a great piece on the website about Biden and whether or not he is a front runner and what his front runner status looks like at the moment. So I encourage everyone to go check that out and read it on the website today, 538.com. Let's begin with public opinion on impeachment. When Pelosi announced the formal impeachment inquiry a little less than a week ago, on average, about 36% of Americans supported impeachment. How has public opinion changed since then, Nate?
It's changed pretty significantly. In the most recent round of polls, I would say, roughly speaking, you have even support for impeaching or not impeaching the president, maybe around 45% for both, if you take an average of recent polls. There are a couple of complications here that I should mention as you're parsing through different polls. Number one is that the timing seems to matter some. I mean, obviously, this is a very real-time event. And even last week, you kind of had earlier last week, as initial news about Ukraine broke, you began to see some Democrats calling for impeachment, including, importantly, Nancy Pelosi, frankly, before some of the most damaging evidence came out. And then later in the week, you saw, obviously, the quote-unquote transcript, not technically a transcript that the White House published. I may refer to it as a transcript on this podcast, but understand it's not a verbatim conversation.
We've been calling it a call summary. That's our style.
A call summary.
Yeah, yeah.
Reconstruction is a term you could use. And then Thursday you had, was it Thursday? The whistleblower's complaint came out. You've also had Trump acting in ways that I would consider a bit erratic. So therefore, the timing's important. And if you see a big national poll come out looking at the exact date, it's going to be important. Number two is the distinction between supporting the impeachment process and actually impeaching the president. When this was all kind of abstract, that didn't seem to make that much difference in the questions. But you do have now a distinction that some Democrats and even some Republicans are trying to parse between having hearings or a process versus actually voting to impeach Trump.
Yeah. So when we break those two things out, because they've been polling, do you support an impeachment inquiry versus do you support impeachment? What's the differences in responses when you break those two things out?
We don't have enough data yet to really nail that down.
Yeah, we have been That's the right answer. It's still, especially in this new landscape, we're still getting data and it's hard to break down. But we've been going through the data we do have, looking for patterns. Laura Bronner, our quantitative editor, looking for patterns. And like, so not only are there questions, okay, do you support opening impeachment proceedings? Do you support opening an impeachment inquiry? And then there's, do you support impeachment, right? There's also questions like, do you support opening impeachment to remove the president? Right. So is that asking people whether they support removing Trump, or is that just saying, hey, impeachment is meant as a process to remove the president? Anyway, there are a bunch of different question wordings. There's not really a pattern in the results we have so far, maybe most of all because we don't have that many results, in terms of like support for an inquiry, getting more support for impeachment worded vaguely, getting more support than removing the president entirely. But that could just be a fact that we don't have that much data yet really in this new landscape.
Yeah, casually it looked like some of the polling about an impeachment inquiry, the inquiry itself, got more support than straight up impeachment. Is that not even that pattern has really emerged?
I mean, you would expect that pattern to emerge.
But not yet really.
But to Micah's point, that's just like one of several important differences in question wording. It may be important whether the question says, because of Ukraine, do you support impeachment?
Yeah.
It may be important, like Micah said, about whether it mentions removal or not. You know, so ordinarily with like approval rating polling or horse race polling, there are differences because of house effects. Some pollsters are systematically lean one way or the other. Here you have that, but on top of that, you have differences in question wording that could be quite pertinent.
So,
but I don't want to obscure that. I think let's not obscure the top line, which is these numbers have shifted in a hurry, in a way that's not very nice for President Trump.
And do we know who those voters or respondents are who have changed their minds from, say, 36 to an increase in 10 points in support for either impeachment or an impeachment inquiry?
It's really, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's really across the board. So I took all the data we have, threw it into one bucket, and just ignored the question wording problem for a second, which maybe that undermines this whole thing. But if you do that and you separate the results out by among Republicans, among Democrats, among independents, and just take like a simple moving average, what you see is all three groups' support for impeachment increases by anywhere from like 10 to 15 points. Now, do I think that's real? It kind of makes sense, right, Nate? Like normally when you see a movement, you do see movement across the board.
Yeah, so I probably should have actually done that myself and gone through all the polls. My impression was that the first polls that came out showed more movement among Democrats.
Yeah.
And then the later polls showed a little bit more even-handed between Democrats, independents, and to some extent even Republicans. Because there are two things here. I mean, I think there are arguments to be had about like how much of this is because Democratic leaders finally came out for impeachment versus the news itself. Those things are hard to separate. I lean into the latter more. I think it's probably more driven by the news itself, but you're definitely going to have some effects from vote.
I mean, don't they kind of compound each other in a way? Like, you now have Nancy Pelosi, whenever she's speaking to the country, is reiterating things that are in all of these news reports, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the hypothetical, right? It's not like Pelosi suddenly said, okay, we've reconsidered all the evidence from the Mueller report and emoluments, whatever else, and now all of a sudden we've decided that, yeah, the case is really bad for impeachment. She was largely arguing about this new evidence that has come out of a different scandal. I think we can use the term scandal fairly. And so, yeah, at the same time, you know, Democrats who have been calling for impeachment for a long time would say we laid the groundwork and we were the leaders here and not Pelosi and these kind of swing district representatives. That'll be a debate you'll probably hear off and on for a long time. I'm not sure it's actually important to what happens going forward so much as like it's, you know, an interesting question for polling geeks and for pundits and for people like that. But, you know, but the numbers are definitely moving. And again, it seems like a little bit like you saw more initial movement among Democrats and then it's evened out among all groups.
Yeah. And I mean, this is really what you would expect to happen, right? Like impeachment for a very long time was an issue that unified Republicans, divided Democrats, and independents were sort of closer to Republicans than they were to Democrats. I think so far you've seen at the very least Democrats become more united around the issue, and you've started to see it divide Republicans a little bit more and independents creep a little bit closer to Democrats. that, if you're a Democrat rooting for impeachment, that is the low-hanging fruit, really. I think in the country today, given how partisan politics are, if you have the entire party coming out for something, then the voters to that party are going to rally behind it. So to me, it's like, okay, we see Democrats rally behind impeachment. What happens over the next several weeks and months among independents and Republicans? Can Democrats successfully prosecute that case where independents move closer and closer to the Democratic point of view and it divides Republicans more and more?
Where is the level that Democrats would need to get public opinion to in order to confidently move forward with actually impeaching the president? And of course, this is probably not something that we can answer scientifically at this point, but maybe use this as a benchmark, right? 53% of Americans disapprove of the job that Trump is doing. Would that be enough? If 53% of Americans supported impeachment, the number of people who disapprove of Trump's job overall, would that give Democrats basically the go-ahead?
I mean, I think they're going ahead. I find
so at this point, they're not reacting to public opinion polling. They're just kind
of course they are. Of course they are, right? And if you look at Nancy Pelosi's various remarks, she kind of said this is not political. But then later on, she said in a private meeting with the caucus, like, hey, you know, the polls have moved on this. But I think, look, if you have read or listened to me on impeachment, you know, I thought that the risks were downside weighted for Democrats for impeaching on Mueller. You know, there is a huge amount of uncertainty, and that uncertainty ranges all the way from specifically it backfiring on Democrats to Trump actually being removed from office. If you're not considering either of those as like non-crazy possibilities, then I think you're overconfident, because there is a process that is quite dynamic and can be quite chaotic. And so the range of outcomes is very wide. I guess I don't think it's particularly downside weighted anymore for Democrats, right? I think there are scenarios where it works out poorly for them, scenarios where it works out well,
But you don't think, for example, that moving forward with actually impeaching President Trump is dependent on getting a majority of Americans behind impeachment at this point. They're just moving forward.
The only way is if the story ripens in a way for Democrats that, like, I mean, I think you need, like, a couple of things to happen, right? You need some kind of complication where maybe there is some, I don't know, maybe there is some conduct with Hunter Biden or something, right?
Or the whistleblower is in some way discredited, although then, of course, you still have the phone call. But maybe the whistleblower being discredited throws enough smoke into the situation.
I mean, right now, Republicans don't have any defenses whatsoever. And so I'm not sure that their position won't get worse.
Well, other than what happened is okay.
But they're not quite saying that either. I mean, they're sort of saying that and sort of not. And like, they really aren't very well collected as far as any types of arguments they're making in their defense. And Trump, I think, is obviously not behaving the way you would advise someone to behave if he were really under threat of impeachment. So I don't know. But, you know, but it's inherently unpredictable. You know, one element is Democrats will have to decide whether to have the impeachment focus narrowly on Ukraine or incorporate a broader range of topics. I think Pelosi's instinct is mostly on Ukraine. I think the swing district Democrats also mostly Ukraine. I think it's kind of the safer play. But who knows? I mean, is it impossible to imagine in a volatile news environment Democrats in Congress growing things up? No, it's not hard to imagine.
No, that's easy to imagine. But like, to give people a sense, okay, so like the prototypical example or like cautionary tale that I think Pelosi has been really abiding by until very recently was the Clinton impeachment backfiring on Republicans in 98, right? But if you look at polls from around that time, the 98 midterm elections, opposition to impeachment was in like the 60s, mid-60s, approaching 70%. A couple polls showed like above 70%. So in that sense, already, if the early polling post-Ukraine holds, Democrats are already in a better position public opinion-wise than Republicans were with the Clinton impeachment in 98. Now, are they where Democrats were with the Nixon impeachment when Nixon resigned? No.
Where was he?
Support for impeaching Nixon at the very end was, I mean, at the very, very end, it was above 60%. It was like high 50s into the 60s. But even a little before then, you know, it had sort of clear majority support. So I think what Nate said earlier, which is very true, which is the movement we've seen among the public over the last week is super significant. if it holds. I mean, we'll see. You know, as Nate said, maybe Democrats screw it up.
We have plenty more to discuss when it comes to the public opinion polling on impeachment. But before we get to that, today's podcast is brought to you by NetSuite. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. But the problem growing businesses have that keeps them from knowing their numbers is their hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, and so on. It's just a big, inefficient mess, taking up too much time and too many resources. And that hurts the bottom line. Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform, giving you the visibility and control you need to grow. With NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, finance and accounting, orders, and HR instantly, right from your desktop or phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/538. That's netsuite.com/538 to download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits. netsuite.com/538. All right, we're back. And Nate, before we took a break, you were saying that essentially there's high unpredictability when it comes to the outcome of this impeachment inquiry. And given that, I was looking at the betting markets this morning, and it really does seem like people are betting on all kinds of different outcomes. Can you give us some background, Nate, on where the betting markets are and what kind of outcomes people are considering?
So predict it, which we often cite on this program and sometimes roll our eyes at a little bit because I think prediction markets are not as smart as people who do them think, but they're probably better than naked conventional wisdom, has about a 70% chance of Trump being impeached, not necessarily removed from office, obviously.
What about removed from office?
Well, they have like a 15-ish% chance that Trump will not finish his first term. Obviously, there are multiple scenarios. There are scenarios involving him resigning like Nixon did. There are scenarios involving the 25th Amendment for incapacitation. For the record, I believe Predicted does not consider scenarios where the president actually dies. So it's not part of that 85%. The bet is off in that case. So, you know, I don't think that number is crazy, and I'm someone who probably during the Mueller report where that number was at 15% or whatever did think it was kind of often much higher than 15% actually did think it was kind of crazy. You know, it's a dynamic process, and Republicans, you've already seen some Republican defections with Adam Kinzinger, which is a who is a congressman from Illinois, Republican from a fairly conservative Romney Trump district, came out and said it was disgusting that the president is invoking the idea of civil conflict. So I don't know. You've seen retired members like Jeff Flake support impeachment. You've seen Romney a little bit. But like the thing is like...
Well, Tom Bossert too, Nate, Trump's former Homeland Security advisor, came out and said like, man, this ain't so great.
The thing is like the Republican defenses so far have been so feeble that I do just wonder like what it's going to be like for these folks when they have to like defend the president's conduct for months and months and months at a time, right? This is, by the way, why I think on Mueller and every other cause for impeachment so far, the evidence was ambiguous enough where you could have talking points that were sometimes wrong, maybe completely wrong, but like, we're going to sound ridiculous. We're going to make you sound like an idiot if you had to say them on national TV. I'm sorry. We strive for candor on this show. Kevin McCarthy on 60 Minutes last night sounded like an idiot talking about Trump's conduct toward Ukraine. He sounded like an idiot.
Coming out bold.
Because he doesn't have any good arguments to make. He's not a stupid guy.
I have a question here, though. Because when we were talking about the Mueller investigation, it was always about trying to determine whether or not there was an actual crime. And at this point, they still have not established whether or not there was an actual crime. Is it going to come back to that in this impeachment inquiry?
So one... In the Russia investigation, there was a special counsel investigating things. So it was about a crime. They were looking for a crime. With Ukraine, crime doesn't really come into it, right?
Well, I mean, it could if Republicans try to frame it that way, for example.
If they want to frame it as like, okay, you have to show criminal wrongdoing on the president's part to impeach him, they could try that. Sure. That might even work. I think that is kind of mixed up in how Americans think about it. But the difference in Ukraine is... Crime or no, there's a there. That's already been established, right? President Trump pressured the Ukrainian president to interfere in a U.S. election. That is beyond dispute now. The White House itself released a call summary showing that. We never got to that point in the Russia investigation where Trump himself was directly implicated in a there, right? So we're kind of well beyond where Russia was, I think, right? Am I wrong in saying?
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, abuse of presidential power doesn't necessarily have to be a legal crime per se. And by the way, you might discover a quid pro quo later on. There is much more evidence to come out, presumably. But third of all, like, do Republicans really want to be saying that, yeah, what Trump did was really bad, but it's not technically a crime, therefore you shouldn't impeach?
I mean, potentially, if that's their best argument, potentially, right?
No, they might. I think they could make that argument, Ian, and actually, maybe I think there's more of a chance of it succeeding than you do. I think the American public has long been confused about what is necessary to be impeached. I mean, the Constitution is sort of confusing about what's necessary to be
impeached. Yeah, high crimes and misdemeanors. What are high crimes and misdemeanors? Well, that's up for Congress to decide.
He is running for re-election.
Yeah.
He's running for re-election is a big problem. And also, everything the president has done since whenever the tipping point in the story is, call it Wednesday, whatever, has made him look like he has problems to conceal. Yeah, if you were advising the GOP, then I don't know. I don't know what you do, because he's running for re-election. So, if it's second term, it might not matter as much. But like,
what about the fact that he's running for re-election changes the game here and would make Republicans not want to say, like, hey, just as we talked about in the Mueller investigation, this is a question of whether or not a crime was committed. You can disapprove of the behavior. In fact, all kinds of different people have disapproved of all kinds of different behavior throughout Trump's presidency, including well-known Republicans, but it's not a crime, and that's what we reserve impeachment for.
Because Trump probably will be the Republican nominee and will be on the ballot next November. I say probably. I wasn't saying probably before, but you need that probably now.
I feel like I've come back from vacation. I'm witnessing like a whole new Nate Silver here.
No, it's the facts have changed.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so 2 points. Well, 1 point. Remember all during the Russia investigation, this podcast, for example, I think we talked about the Russia investigation really sporadically, right, on this podcast.
Like, we had Mueller talk, but yeah, I mean, it was when there was a hearing, when a new piece of evidence came out.
It was big news.
Right.
We have already, with Ukraine, I think had like 10 segments on this. You know, that's an exaggeration. But the point is that we were very cautious on the Russia investigation to sort of not get ahead of the story, right? And that meant not talking about it endlessly, only talking about it when there was something new. Or to use another way to explain this, remember the game we played with the Russia investigation, smoke versus fire?
Yeah.
We would never play that with this.
Oh,
because
why not?
The whole building is on fire. You know?
Oh my goodness.
No, honestly, it's like there is no smoke versus fire here because...
Wait, Nate, do you agree with that?
Yeah, look, the transcript that the White House released, I still think people are they sort of like, I don't know, it's like your ears are blown out and you can't kind of hear the fluctuations in volume loud enough, right? Or clearly
no,
enough.
No, it happened like, really fast.
But like the transcript the White House released was like the kind of evidence that Democrats were dreaming of
in the Russian
for months about Mueller. And the White House released it. It was freaking crazy. It was like one of the craziest incidents in American politics that I can remember.
No, that's, Gailey, you were gone. But one of the first thing I said when the transcript was released was like, okay, sub in Zelensky and Ukraine with Putin and Russia. And how would this have played during the Russia investigation? The answer is it would have been the smoking gun in the Russia investigation. So look, impeachment is a political exercise, right? By design. The framers did not give the power to impeach to the judicial branch. They gave it to the people's elected representatives in Congress, right? So it's sort of like all of this is politics and all of it is politics by design. The fact that this happened so quickly, I do wonder about how that will affect the politics of everything. All this comes back to this like really ill-defined complex system that defines what's acceptable and what's expected and what the body politics wants and or will tolerate, right? And over the past couple weeks, I think that all has changed really quickly, but probably it happened so quickly that it also hasn't changed enough.
Mueller did not deliver relative to Democrats' hopes for how he would deliver. He also did not exonerate the president. It's very important to say, right? But like at the end of the day, the most important part is just like there is like proof admitted to by the White House of this, right? If some emoluments scandal, right? If some like charging rooms to foreign leaders at Trump Hotel in exchange for favors or some kind of another, if there were transcripts released by the White House that showed that, I think Trump would also be in quite a bit of trouble, depending on the context, right? But it's like, you know, I think I get into arguments with like kind of resistance-y folks sometimes, and it's like, they're like, well, there's all this other really bad stuff, blah, 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 right? It's like, but here there's proof, and there's proof that like the White House itself released. And that's just so much more important because you can't prove it is the first defense, right? Right. And the kind of second defense is like, well, there was a cover up of the underlying crime. You can't say that. You can't say, oh, the president himself wasn't involved. You can't say that. Like the three or four best defenses are all removed. And like all of a sudden, if you're left with the fifth and sixth and seventh best defenses, then, well, you're kind of in trouble.
And so before we wrap up on this segment, I do want to come back to the polling a little bit. You were saying there's proof. And so what there is proof of is that President Trump pressured the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, to interfere in the election by investigating the Bidens. Not debating whether or not that's a crime, outside of impeachment altogether, how do Americans feel about that behavior?
I think the answer is, one, you kind of can't take the context out of this. You can't take impeachment out of this. I think that informs public opinion. So it's not like we can conduct an experiment in the, you know, an isolated,
if hypothetically,
right?
A president.
That said, our colleagues at ABC News and Ipsos asked this question of just like, how serious a problem is it that President Trump encouraged the Ukrainian president to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter? 43% said very serious. 21% said somewhat serious. So that's 64% of Americans think it's serious to some degree. 19% said not so serious. 17% said not serious at all. So that's 36% on the not so serious.
So that kind of gets at whether or not this becomes framed as, was it a crime or not? Americans have already said they don't like this behavior.
No, they say it's serious. And to me, the standout number there is 21% say somewhat serious. Somewhat serious, they obviously are concerned about this, but are you going to remove a president from office over something that's somewhat serious? Probably not. So to me, what I would look for is like, do either the facts of the case or do Democrats prosecute that case well enough to get that 21% who think it's somewhat serious into the very serious bucket?
One more thing before we wrap up with this segment is we published an article on the website today basically saying that when really big news events happened, sometimes it's cause to be skeptical of initial polling. Now, is this one of those cases? And why exactly should we be skeptical of initial polling?
So the argument is that you have something called differential non-response bias, which is that when news events happen that are clearly favorable for one party or another, or one candidate or another, that those candidate supporters tend to answer polls more, they're excited, and that it happens in ways that are subtle enough where even with the usual weighting that pollsters use, they can't correct for a too Democratic sample, for example, or a too liberal sample. You know, this is probably a methodological debate that like is a little beyond the scope of today, right? Like if the average polling analyst thinks this problem is like a 7 out of 10, I'm more like it's a 4.2 out of 10 or something. I think it can be like a little
headline
overweighted. But it is a reason to be distrustful of polls, as there are other reasons too, that are taking in the middle of a news event as opposed to like when things have settled down. I mean, I know like whenever you're in a news storm like this, it feels like, oh, it's getting crazier and crazier. Inevitably, things will calm down, I think, right?
You were doubting yourself like mid-sentence there. I'm not like a polling expert, so I don't know the methodological parts of this that well. But Mark Blumenthal, who writes at Mystery Pollster, wrote this for us today, and it's super interesting. The idea is basically like when news stories get real, real, real big, they can like break polling in biasing who responds to polls themselves, and in biasing that response and completion rate in ways that pollsters aren't accounting for.
So in this situation, it would be something like Democrats are so excited exactly. about their newfound position that they want to impeach the president that when a pollster calls, Democrats are much more likely to answer the questions and complete the entire poll than Republicans who are like, I don't know about all this.
That's exactly right. But what I would say is, look, pollsters are really smart. This is a reason to treat the first few early polls with caution. But honestly, you should have been doing that anyway. So this is not a reason, I repeat, not a reason to distrust all polling or to even be extra skeptical of all polling or most polls or some polls. This is just a reason to like wait for a little more data, be a little extra cautious. That's it.
All right. Well, I think we're going to leave this segment there. Overall message is that support for impeachment is up significantly, and we will keep watching as more data and information comes in. We know that there are going to be hearings throughout the week, private, I think, so far. But, of course, we will keep you apprised when things happen.
What are we going to call this? We had Mueller talk. We need a name for the Ukraine. Nate, you're good at naming
things. Insane in the Ukraine?
That's
insane. Insane in the Ukraine. I don't think that's like a segment name, is it?
Ukrainium.
Oh, wow. That is solid gold.
Blowing your Ukrainium.
All right, so look for Ukrainian podcasts in your feed coming up. For now, let's move on and talk about the state of the Democratic primary. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by Hims. 66% of men start to lose their hair by age 35. Once you've noticed thinning hair, it can be too late. The best way to prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have some. For Hims.com is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and other wellness supplements for men. Hims is helping guys be the best version of themselves with licensed physicians and FDA-approved products to help treat hair loss. Hims was created by a guy who knows that some men's health conversations are easier online than in person. For Hims, connects you with real doctors online, which could save you hours, and it's completely confidential and discreet. Order now. Listeners can get started with the Hims Complete Hair Kit for just $5 right now while supplies last and subject to doctor's approval. See website for full details and safety information. This could cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy somewhere else. Go to forhims.com/538. That's forhims.com/538. forhims.com/538. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Casper. Say hello to Casper, the sleep company with outrageously comfortable products that help everyone sleep and live better. From award-winning mattresses to pillows, bedding, and furniture, Casper is transforming the way we sleep. The four layers of premium foam are designed to provide pressure relief for all-night comfort. Zoned support is designed to provide extra support to keep your back aligned. With bedding, bed frames, and even Glow, a magical light for better sleep, Casper has everything you need to complete your dream bedroom. Need time to decide? Sleep on it. Casper mattresses come with a 100-night risk-free trial. Rest easy with free shipping and free returns. Get the mattress of your dreams today. Go to casper.com/politics and use code POLITICS for $100 towards the purchase of select mattresses. That's casper.com/politics, code POLITICS, to get $100 towards the purchase of select mattresses. Terms and conditions apply. See casper.com/terms. Customer experience and product reviews are based on Casper.com, authorized retailer sites, and Google. We're back, and on last Monday's podcast, you all discussed the latest high-quality polling out of Iowa, which showed Warren and Biden essentially tied. Warren was leading by 2 points within the margin of error. Since then, a number of good polls have come out for Warren, showing her leading by a slim margin both nationally and in other early states. Various outlets and commentators are now characterizing Elizabeth Warren as the frontrunner, or at least posing that question. So count us in on that list of outlets that's at least posing the question. Nate and Micah, is Elizabeth Warren, as of September 30th, the Democratic frontrunner?
Nope.
Is she ahead in national polls? No. And to be honest, she's ahead in some national polls. There is a lot of cherry picking. People are really excited about the Elizabeth Warren is ahead nationally narrative. It probably clicks better than the Biden's ahead story. It probably gets better ratings on MSNBC. She's not yet ahead in national polls. She might be the front runner based on her polls in Iowa and New Hampshire, which more often than not have shown her ahead of Biden at least half the time. We haven't had a ton of polls. We've had, what, 3 polls in Iowa, I believe, and 2 of them showed Warren ahead of Biden, 1 showed Biden ahead. We've had 1 poll of New Hampshire, going off the top of my head again, that showed Warren ahead. We've seen 1 or 2 polls in South Carolina had Biden still comfortably ahead, and conflicting results in Nevada. I think we saw 1 poll in Nevada showed, like, Warren and Biden tied, and 1 poll showing Bernie and Biden tied in Nevada this weekend. So clearly there's, like, a lot of good news for Warren in those early state polls. The CNN polls that had this weekend that had Biden winning South Carolina and tied for the lead with Bernie in Nevada are pretty good polls for Biden. The Nevada poll is good for Bernie also. He has had very few good polls otherwise in the early states. But yeah, look, I think you always want to look at kind of the long-term average of polls. And I think depending on how you weight state polls, depending on how much you kind of buy into, like, the more gut-feely kind of subjective stuff that Biden is not up to task, that impeachment will play to Warren's benefit, that she has momentum, it's perfectly reasonable to argue that she is the most likely nominee.
Would you argue that?
I don't know, you know, man. I don't know.
Well,
maybe.
Here's another way to ask this is, like, what would it take data wise for us to say, okay, now Warren is the clear front runner? Because for me, it's like one of those CNN polls, the CNN poll out of South Carolina, for example, showed Warren, I think it was at like 3% among black voters. Can Warren win the nomination without any meaningful black support? I guess it's numerically possible, right? But it just seems a little far-fetched. And then also, I would just want to see, to Nate's point about it's only been a few polls, I want to see more polls out of Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina showing Warren leading. There's clearly been a lot of good news for Warren. She's clearly been on an upward trajectory. And I think there's a real, you could have a real argument now about, is the best way to describe it as, like,
co-front runners
or whatever, something like that. But you just want to see more of this before you kind of go. And that's like, look, Warren's upward trajectory has been slow and gradual. And in that sense, that distinguishes her from Buttigieg, for example, Harris, for example, and then going to other campaigns, you know, that distinguishes her from, like, the Herman Cain surge and decline, the Michelle Bachmann surge and decline. Do we know empirically that rising gradually means you can't collapse suddenly? I don't think so.
Empirically, it's what we would call, like, a random walk, more or less, which is that, like, the number you're at today is more or less the number you predict yourself to be at period of time in X number of days. With Warren, it's obviously been very steady. I mean, we are starting to get to the point now where there's, like, not a lot of low-hanging fruit to pick off, right? So all camps except for the top 3 are now down around 3 or 4%. You know, I'm not sure that the 3% that are with Andrew Yang or the 4% or 5% with Pete Buttigieg are going to leave at this point, right? Kamala Harris is the one who seemed to be most up and down, is really far down now. Bernie has around 15%, 16% in national polls. If you look at the most attentive voters, early state polls, he's in the low teens. Maybe there's a few more points there for Warren, but, like, not a lot. It's, I think, the remaining Sanders supporters are a pretty pro-Sanders group. So it gets a little bit harder, and maybe now Warren has to take from Biden. I mean, by the way, when you talk about impeachment for the first half hour of this show, it kind of seems like we're talking about these relatively minor polling shifts. It's been a fairly static primary, and I think in some ways maybe impeachment could make it more static, maybe, because there's, like, less news cycles devoted to the primary. I mean, that means if you're anybody except Warren or Biden or maybe Bernie, I'm not sure that's good news for you. If I am Pete Buttigieg and I want to surge, and we're talking about stuff that's not really in my wheelhouse and half the news cycles that would be devoted to, you know, all of a sudden I get a good poll in Iowa. Well, you know what? Actually, the president being impeached is a more interesting story, even for 538, than Buttigieg getting 12% in some Iowa poll. And so, like, I think there might not be as much opportunities for these kind of media-fueled surges outside the top 2.5, let's call it.
That's interesting, right? That the media oxygen is going to be spent on impeachment, and that means that the poll numbers that we have now may be likely to kind of remain where they are. I mean, of course, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that look, I think impeachment is like a huge bucket of uncertainty dumped into the primary race. The effect maybe is what Nate described, which is like it kind of has this stultifying effect on other would-be change factors in the race. That was a very weird way to describe that. But I don't think we know.
Do we have any sense at this point how this is all affecting Biden? The fact that it was Trump pushing for an investigation of the Bidens in Ukraine?
I think it's too early to say.
There were not super many high quality polls of the Democratic primary that came out late last week, which is what you want to see. There's the usual, I think Harris X does tracking for ScottRasmussen.com, not to be confused with Rasmussen Reports.
As in ScottRasmussen.com is more credible?
Well, I think that, yeah. One good thing about them is they are doing with Harris Interactive, or Harris X is now branded, daily polls. And those didn't really seem to show much of a shift late last week. They had Biden 33. I mean, these polls actually are a few days out of date now, but they hadn't shown in the initial couple of days, like, any movement for any of the candidates. But I don't know. My initial instinct was that, like, actually this was going to be fine for Biden in the primary, maybe even good, because Democrats come to his defense. For reasons I can't quite articulate, my instinct is that it's actually risky for him. I think, so it's changed. It changed my mind a little bit.
Well, because now you have, the Biden campaign put out a letter to the networks basically saying, don't invite Rudy Giuliani on. But essentially, you have President Trump and his surrogates like Giuliani going on the news and talking about, no, this is really a scandal about Biden. And so that's, of course, part of the risk, I think, that you're talking about, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of things here. Number one is I'm not sure that the Biden campaign is excited about going off script. Number two, I think the fact that Trump has so few defenses of this conduct might lead him to say, okay, the Biden stuff is really bad. You know, Rudy Giuliani on the shows this weekend was spouting theories about Biden that did not really seem very sound. But voters hear those, and there's a patina of scandal or something, and like Biden kind of seems like he's a little gun-shy about responding to it because they're running a very risk-averse campaign. Warren was the most vocal, except for Tom Steyer, early Democrat in favor of impeachment. The Biden folks don't want to put him on the morning shows to defend himself. It just, I don't know. I just have changed my mind on this, and I have no idea. I can definitely see ways where it helps Biden, but I feel like it's not a development that the Biden campaign would welcome.
Let me outline another potential scenario where this hurts Biden. A lot of Biden support, and in fact, a lot of Biden's pitch to voters is about beating Trump, right? And hey, I'm the best person to beat Trump. I do better than everyone else in general election polls against him. Trump is a huge danger, and we just need to beat him, and then we'll worry about like our big policy goals later. To the extent that the Ukraine scandal weakens Trump, if that happens, it also weakens Biden's argument. Because if all of a sudden Trump's approval rating is at 38% instead of 42%, then, you know, I'm not going to say anybody can beat him, but it's much easier to beat him. And so I think you'd maybe see if come February, again, Trump support is at 38% approval rating, then I think Democratic voters might say to themselves, screw it, this guy's weakened. Let's go for Warren. Let's go for Bernie. You know, we don't really have to play it safe here. This person's in a really tough position.
A lot of Democrats like Biden on the policy. I think people miss that.
No, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. But it does hurt his electability argument.
It makes it more complicated, right? I don't think his campaign has quite figured out what to say, but who knows? You know, if a poll came out tomorrow showing Biden up to 34% or something, you know, it wouldn't, like, shock me. He hasn't fallen that far, by the way, right? People, like, really need to, like, actually look at averages.
Yeah, this is worth mentioning here, which is Warren didn't take a lot of her support from Biden. Who did Warren get her support from?
No, it's really Harris, right?
Harris, and in the early states where Bernie's numbers are down at 11 or something, I don't think you can explain how he's down at 11 in these white liberal states without Warren having taken some of that support.
And kind of wrapping up here on the topic of Warren, since we asked if she is the front runner, is this the moment at which you would expect that if there's going to be a kind of anyone but Warren push from the establishment or more corporate aligned members of the Democratic Party, it would be now? Is this the point in the race where you see a switch in terms of who people are focusing on when they think about the front runner that they need to overtake or the person that they need to prevent from winning the nomination.
I don't think we've seen that because I think people still think of Biden as the front runner. Are there people out there, are there interests out there who are like really worried about Warren now in the Democratic Party?
Well, I guess what I'm reacting a little bit to this CNBC report, actually, that the headline reads, Wall Street Democratic donors warn the party will sit out or back Trump if you nominate Elizabeth Warren. And of course, they're working with anonymous sources, but, you know, this is a
Warren
thread,
probably.
I imagine we start to loved it, right?
Well, she, Warren like, put loves it all over that Twitter. Headline. Yeah, yeah.
What do you think, Dane?
There are a whole number of consequences that could result from Warren now being perceived as the front runner.
If she were to be perceived as the front runner.
Which I think she is. I mean, if you follow the dialogue among like national pundits, right? I think they're not, I mean, they've been predicting Biden's demise for months. And I think they're not looking at like, you know, the South Carolina polls, you see an impulse this weekend that were good for Biden in South Carolina, Nevada, got very barely any attention because they didn't match the Warren narrative when they were just merely okay polls for her. Although, again, if I'm Warren, I'm like, okay, actually, I don't mind that this impeachment thing is happening right when you could imagine the narrative turning a little bit and toward more scrutiny and skepticism.
Scrutiny of her.
Yeah, but can you were going to say what the risks were, Nate, about being perceived as the front runner. What are they?
The risks are that other candidates go after you more. We've seen a little bit from the Sanders campaign where they're kind of trialing some attacks on Warren. Biden has not really gone after Warren much either. Harris is not really going after Warren much, so that could change. The media could get more skeptical and say, let's re-examine Pocahontas. Let's find some other scandal that's serious or not that you haven't thought about yet, right? Expectations will be higher for her fundraising number. Voters in Iowa might feel a little frisky because they like to be, I don't know, contrarian. They might say, well, what about Buttigieg or Klobuchar? I mean, you'd rather be rising than falling, but we know enough to know that, like, there was a point in this news cycle long ago in the winter where Warren's press coverage was very negative, and so these things can shift.
No, and maybe that's a good point from Nate, that maybe now impeachment sort of like takes the place of what would have been a skeptical cycle of news coverage for Warren. Can I just say, though, we were citing Predict It earlier, and I'm normally not the one that is throwing shade at Predict It, but I just push back on the idea that Warren is perceived as the front runner. But on Predict It, the odds implied by the prices there, I think, give Warren a 49% chance of winning the Democratic nomination to Biden's 21%. Am I reading that right, Nate? That seems bonkers. That is bonkers, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to argue, I mean, we've argued that, like, I think the top two are way ahead of three, who I think is Sanders, and four, I'm not even sure who it is at the moment.
Buttigieg, I think.
Kamala Harris's campaign would not be happy with you for saying that, Galen.
But Warren has more than a twice as good a chance of winning the nomination as Biden? Question mark? Exclamation point? Yeah.
That doesn't seem right. Yeah. She might be more likely, but like I think there's a little bit of – that seems like a big gap given that he is still ahead in national polls.
So as of about noon on Monday, stock in Warren is selling at 49 cents, stock in Biden at 20 cents. That's crazy. By the way, tied for third and fourth are Bernie Sanders and Andrew Yang. Tied for fourth and fifth are Hillary Clinton and Pete Buttigieg.
What? This is the moment in the podcast where we point out that part of the reason we joke about the people behind Predict It and Betfair being Scottish teenagers is because they're not always reliable.
No, but look, who knows? Who knows what'll happen, you know?
Who knows? Although I think empirically, looking at historical polling, somebody at Elizabeth Warren's polling levels right now does not have a 49% chance of winning the Democratic nomination.
No.
No. I feel like we're kind of in a spot that, like, is always difficult for us if we're talking probabilities, which is, like, I think Biden plainly has more than a 20% chance of winning the nomination. I also think it's considerably under 50%. Yeah. Okay? So if I think it's 35 or 30, and the conventional wisdom says 20, I'm going to be wrong most of the time. I'm pretty sure, though, if I could make that bet 100 times, I'd come out way ahead, because that is a very big gap given where they are respectively in national polls, at least.
No, by 538 terms, as Claire mentioned on a previous podcast, you know, normally we're like, actually, the odds are 12.5%, not 10%. You know, 35% versus 20%, that's a huge gap.
All right. Well, I think we're going to leave it there for now. as we already mentioned, we may end up, well, we will see you later this week, but whether or not it's an emergency Ukrainium podcast is yet to be seen.
Ukrainium.
Anyway, Micah, thank you.
Insane in the Ukrainium.
We're having too much
Print
fun.
It. Print it.
We'll make a t-shirt. We can make t-shirts now. All right, Nate, thank you. Get back to whatever you're doing on the road. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. Our intern is Jake Arlo. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the podcast store of your choosing, or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.